the Supreme Court ruled yesterday 5-4 in favor of that group of white firefighters from New Haven, Connecticut, saying they had been discriminated against because of their race. And this could affect employers everywhere. It's cities and governments, private employers too. Could also have implications for President Barack Obama's Supreme Court nominee. That's, of course, Sonia Sotomayor. She's involved in this, too, in a way. Well, joining us to talk about it is Professor Jeffrey Rosen from Georgetown University from the Law Center. He writes for the New York Times Magazine, among many other publications. He's in D.C., and he's joining us. Jeffrey, are you there?
I am.
Good morning, Professor. A bit of a muddled ruling because it's a rare case. What can employers and employees take away from this 5-4 ruling on reverse discrimination?
Well, the ruling says that you can only throw out a test that has a disparate impact on minorities. In other words, they score less well than whites if the employer can demonstrate a strong basis in evidence that using results would cause them to lose a lawsuit. So, in other words, the employers have to show that the tests weren't relevant to the jobs or that other equally valid or less discriminatory tests were available. It's hard to say how dramatic an effect this is going to have. On the one hand, there may not be that many situations where cities and private employers throw out tests because of their racial impacts. On the other, in an effort to avoid litigation, lots of employers might just say, we're not going to have these tests in the first place. Let's set up, as the New York Times reported this morning, assessment centers that put firefighters, for example, in real-world situations that see how they perform, and you don't have any written tests at all, just to avoid the entire hassle.
So the real issue here is written tests. You could have practical tests in a way that avoids all this.
That's exactly right. And critics would say that's really too bad because these written tests are a good thing. And supporters would say, because they're discriminatory, let's get rid of them generally.
Right. Well, can we put this ruling in the context of other affirmative action or race bias cases? There was the famous case from 2003 at the University of Michigan where the court said race can be a factor for universities to guide admissions. And I know there are different facts of the case and different precedents, but it sort of seems like you can take advantage of affirmative action up until you're out of undergrad, and then once you're out sort of in the real world, it's no longer as much of a factor. Or is that cutting it too finely?
Well, it's a great analogy, and asking what happened after that 2003 case is very relevant. And generally what happened is universities and law schools found that they could use affirmative action, but they had to be less explicit about it. So the tests became a little more holistic. University admissions looked at someone's entire background and their essays rather than just their test scores. But I think it's too much to say it stops at law school. This case had very dramatic facts about throwing out a test because it's disparate impact. And in that sense, the court is definitely putting the squeeze on affirmative action. And the question is that going to mean it'll go away? No. It turns out after 2003, if universities really want these things, they just move away from the very crisp objective test toward more holistic measurements.
Right.
And that may be what employers are going to do too.
So when you say putting the squeeze on affirmative action, it's sort of putting a squeeze on the explicitness of affirmative action, so-called race bias, but the spirit still exists as long as you're not too overt about it, I guess.
That's exactly right. And Justice Ginsburg said back in 2003, it's better to be explicit. Let's be transparent. So that's more fair than using these mushy standards that encourage college students, for example, to write essays about how they were victims and they overcame great adversity. That's actually less fair than an open affirmative action system. And the same thing may happen after this decision today.
Well, that's a great point, Jeffrey. I mean, is this the doctrine that's emerging from the Roberts Court, a kind of don't ask, don't tell about things like affirmative action, et cetera? I mean, I'm wondering if the court could ever rule on the issue of a community's need to have diversity among its firefighters, for instance, as a matter of public safety.
That is very well put, actually. But I think the Roberts Court people would say, we're saying ban it entirely, or we're going up to the edge of saying that. But the desire to have diversity is so strong in society that people just won't listen to these legalistic rulings, and they're finding ways to say that race matters regardless of what the court says. So in some sense, it's really a reminder of the limited power of the courts.
All right, so let's bring this around to Judge Sonia Sotomayor, Obama's nominee, in front of the Senate. Those hearings start in 2 weeks. And, of course, right after this ruling, her potential enemies on the right started attacking the judge for her role in this case. Can you briefly just bring us up to date? What in fact, was Sonia Sotomayor's role in this case in the Second Circuit coming before the Supreme Court?
As the New York Times has reported, Judge Sotomayor did not have a central role in this case. She wasn't the main judge who wrote the opinion below. It was another judge. The opinion was controversial because it was so short. I mean, it was such a very contested case, and the opinion that Sotomayor joined just basically ruled for the city and didn't give a lot of reasons. So her dissenting colleague said it should have been a more fully reasoned opinion.
But the fact that she put a signature on a ruling as part of the process is going to become a political issue now, isn't it?
It will indeed, and as you say, her critics on the right are already trying to emphasize that the Supreme Court dissenters, led by Justice Ginsburg, seem to distance themselves from Judge Sotomayor's position in that they didn't say they would have ruled for the city outright. They would have required a good reason for getting rid of the test. But I think that the right is really overreading the distance between Justice Ginsburg and Judge Sotomayor. Essentially, they're in the same place. They both would have ruled for the city. And in the end, you know, the right was always going to make this hearing the center of the criticism of her, but it's going to have a hard time getting traction over this because four justices on the Supreme Court essentially took the same position Judge Sotomayor did, and in that sense, her joining the court wouldn't change the balance, and right. it's going to be hard to get a lot of traction on this one.
Right. Well, we'll see how much traction it gets. You know, the Supreme Court fights have a way of morphing into something that go well beyond the facts or even reason sometime on both sides of the aisle. So We'll see what happens with the traction. All right, Jeffrey Rosen, professor at Georgetown Law Center and writer for the New York Times, legal analyst. Thanks for joining us to talk about the ruling in the Ricci case and the effects on Judge Sonia Sotomayor and her nomination.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo. Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.